Good morning, everyone. My name is Heather Forrest. I'm a co-chair of the cross-constituency working group on country and territory names. I'm happy to welcome you all here today. What I'd like to do while we wait for the agenda to be posted for our meeting, what I propose that we do, because we have some new faces in the room, and indeed this issue has taken on a matter of some importance in this meeting, and I suspect it will continue to do so going forward. And in light of the fact that we have some friends from the GAC here this morning, I would like to have everyone introduce themselves, please, so we all have an idea of who we have with us today. So with that, I've introduced myself. Again, Heather Forrest from the GNSO. I'll turn it over to Annabeth.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Annabeth Lang from the CCNSO, and I'm taking over after Lisa Fuhr as a co-chair for this group. So she's moved on to another group. It's always a lot of things to do here, so someone has to take over. And this is one of my interests, so I hope that will be fine for you. And Lisa?
Lisa Fuhr, I'm from .dk, former co-chair.
Maxim Azobafaiti, MTAC vice chair.
I'm Olga Cavalli from Argentina. Good morning, everyone. I'm the GAC representative of Argentina.
Laura Hutchison from .uk.
Monica Konings, ICANN staff.
Scott Harlan from CAT and Mission Rosenman.
Ron Sherwood, .vi, and CCNSO liaison to ALAC.
Lars Hoffman from ICANN staff.
Gabriella Schittig, CCNSO.
Christina Nordstrom, CCNSO.
Gabriela Slack, Business Constituency and GNSO Liaison.
Mary Uduma, Dolenji.
So Patrick Jones, ICANN staff, but also ICANN's participant in the UN Group of Experts on Geographic Names.
Paul Schindler from the CCNSO, former chair of the study group that preceded this one, and .au is my day job.
Bart Bosminkel is ICANN staff.
Is it on? It's on. Nick Wood here on behalf of MARCS, the European Association of Trademark Owners.
Susan Payne from Validaeus.
Ashley Roberts, also from Validaeus.
Natalia Fodic, Aspen Institute.
Griffin Barnett, Silverberg, Goldman and Bykoff, IPC member.
Scott Hayden, Amazon.
Kelvin Wong from ICANN APAC.
Don Slonwaite from CIRA.ca.
Excellent. Thank you very much. What I would like to do first, we have our agenda. Could we make it a bit bigger by the end of the ICANN week? I feel a bit blind, and I suspect I'm not the only one. Thank you. What I would like to do to begin with, and to not take up any more of Olga's valuable time, although I think we were suspecting Peter Nettlefold as well, so hopefully he will.
He ended very, very late.
I can understand that. I can understand that.
That's not the agenda.
No. No, indeed, that's not the agenda. I have the agenda here. Lars, if I... who do I email it to? Lars?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's the one down, Lars, in the same email.
Just scroll down.
Try scrolling down into that document, no? Guys, it's Thursday, but we need to...
Let's just continue. So the first item is the meeting with the GAC anyway.
Yeah, so while we sort this out, the initial item on our agenda, and I'll provide a bit of context to it. So this group, the stage that we're at now is we've reviewed the work of the study group that preceded this group, we are, in doing so, I suppose our activity in reviewing the report of the study group was to attempt to determine whether the situation has changed, if you like, since the report of the study group. And in that sense, what we're looking for is whether country and territory names are used in a different way than they were at the time that the study group developed its report. And we have found that that's not the case, but in having that discussion, it came to our attention that the GAC was working on a similar initiative in a subgroup of a working group on future new GTLD rounds, and with that in mind, we took the initiative to invite our colleagues from the GAC. Now, I understand that this is a proposal that's been tabled by Olga, and I suspect many of us, I did, and I apologize right away. I attended the session yesterday morning, and I did mean to stand up. Peter very kindly on my behalf invited everyone in the room to this session, and I should have stood up and done that myself. I saw you as well, Annabeth, in the room, so that's, I think, many of us attended that session. What I think would be valuable at this stage is, I think, Olga, you offered a helpful summary of your proposal in that meeting, and I don't think we need to revisit that, let's say, in a sense that we have a transcript from that session, and I don't think that's necessary. I think a brief summary of the status of your proposal would be helpful, particularly in light, I suspect you would have discussed that following the session, Switzerland's comments, Switzerland now the chair of the GAC comments about stopping your work, taking stock of where we are more broadly, I suppose. So I think the goal here is to A, formally acknowledge that the GAC is undertaking work in this subgroup that is in a parallel track to ours and indeed overlaps with ours. I think I'd like to explore how those two things overlap and get an understanding of where we each are in that process. So this one isn't so much about substance, it's a high-level update. So with that, I turn it over to Olga, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for the invitation. First, I want to apologize. I have not been able to participate in the calls because they were at a little bit weird time for Argentina, like 4 a.m. I can do it at 7 a.m. or like 11 p.m., but 4, 3 a.m., it's complicated. So my apologies for that, and I remember that there was a time that time was good, but I was traveling. So my apologies for not participating in the calls, which I always try to do in the working groups that I participate or others that are related with. So when we started our work was after the Durban meeting. If you read the communique in that time, there is a specific paragraph that says that ICANN will work with the GAC in trying to refine the rules for new GTLD rounds to avoid what happened with some regional names that were taken for new GTLDs in some countries of Latin America thought, and not only Latin America, also from Asia and Europe and Africa as well. We felt that those names belonged to our regions, communities, or countries. So there were kind of a sovereignty feelings, and companies thought that they were brands. And so we started a discussion that went to an early warning process and then went to some GAC advice. Some companies withdraw the application. That was the case of Patagonia, which was the specific worries of Argentina and Chile and the whole Latin America region. That didn't happen with Amazon. Amazon got a GAC advice against, and then the board presented a report from a legal advisor saying that they should not proceed. So this is the situation that led us to reviewing this to avoid uncertainties for next round for both, for countries and for applicants. Because we also understand that applicants have invested their time and their effort in preparing the applications following a guideline that apparently was okay, but then the countries don't agree, and then people trying to say that GAC has a veto power, but if you read the applicant guidebook, we had this early warning and GAC advice process to oppose. So to lower uncertainties, we started this process. There is a draft document that you are welcome to review. We are we have opened that document for comments for the whole community. It's in the GAC website. I can send you the links. It's not a very long document. We have included their comments from different sources, from the legal advice that I can get for Amazon, or the different inputs from the countries that are participating in the working group. We went through different stages. We analyzed the possibility of doing lists again. Those that followed the GAC work in 2006 or 2007, this idea was in the table, but it was taken away because it was too burdensome or too complicated to maintain this list. Then we thought about a repository of links having names. We didn't agree in that. We thought it was complicated. So now we're going towards preparing a list of best practice guidelines, because we have been talking to different applicants, and we found very interesting best practice examples. I always mention the story of Dot Berlin. Dietrich Kirchanowski came to me in 2007 telling me that there's a Berlin city in the north of Argentina. I had no idea. And he wanted to include all the Berlins in the world before he started his own project. He didn't want problems with other Berlins. And I thought that was a great, great initiative. Also, last week I was in Mexico and I learned that bar is not a bar, but it's also a region in Montenegro. I had no idea. So the people from Dot Bar went to Montenegro and talked to them, and they found, amazingly, that the most important school in that bar region in Montenegro is named Mexico. So that magic coincidence made things went forward, so both parties are happy. And so we believe, for example, good practice could be an early engagement or an early investigation from the applicant side of the name, if it belongs to any region. Some names are very kind of obvious, Amazon, for example. But maybe bar, or maybe some smaller town in a country that you don't have in mind. Maybe a case that it's more difficult to find. So one of our suggestions is that the applicant really make an investigation previous to the submitting the proposal, and some other things that are included in our document. So we have opened this document for comments. As you may have seen in the session, it called a lot of attention from the audience. There were a lot of comments from the intellectual property constituency, which we think we have to find a way to make, we have to learn from this first round of new GTLDs. Countries, applicants, brands, companies. We have to refine it and go towards a better understanding. So this is why we have done this. It is not common that the GAC opens. I'm involved in the GAC since 2006. I have never seen a document for comments from the community. So this is a step forward. So you are welcome to submit comments. It will be open until the end of the month. The idea is to review all the comments, include them in the new version, and keep on working towards the next meeting in Marrakech, and I will stop here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Olga, and for taking the time to come talk to us this morning. Can I ask a few procedural questions? I have followed the development of your proposal since London, and I noticed that the first time that I've heard of a closing for the comments period was in your presentation yesterday morning. A number of us have to travel. It'll take us, the better part of next week to get back to offices, and then that leaves us only 1 week to collaborate with others. Is there any way to extend the comment period?
Yes, of course.
That would be.
By the way, I'm the one leading this effort, and I'm totally flexible. I'm so happy to have received comments from many colleagues, many experts all over the world. So yes, please, if you need more time, that's not a problem. And the document will be, it's a draft, and it will be ongoing from now on, and it will take some time to maybe, hopefully, agree in something. Also, some people have asked me if it will become GAC advice. That I cannot tell now. What I can tell you is that there is an interesting amount of countries following it, aligning with the idea of trying to produce it. So it may become GAC advice if we have consensus or unanimity, or it may become a document addressed by a group of countries.
Thank you, Olga. If I might ask one or two more follow-up questions, and then what I would like to do, what I propose we do, is I'll offer a very brief summary of where we are, let's say, in the process, and we'll say something to Scope as well, because you've spoken to Scope in particular yesterday, and we'll say something a bit about our Scope today, and then we'll open the floor for questions. Before I do that, so to follow up on the comment you've just made, Olga, you say, will this become GAC advice, and it's not clear. I suppose it's important to note, to highlight what was said yesterday by Peter, and I know you can't speak for him, let's say, but he did make clear that this is not something yet that's been put to a vote within the working group or indeed adopted by the full working group. This is still a subgroup initiative. Is that right? Yeah.
It's a good question. The first time we had a vote ever was yesterday for chairs and vice chairs. We don't vote. So those working in the group are kind of aligned in trying to draft the text. The rest of the GAC is aware of the document, and some of other countries do submit comments. So for the moment, it's a draft, and I cannot tell now if it will have the endorsement of the full GAC or not. And as I said before, it may become advice or not, or it may be a document submitted to ICANN by a group of countries.
Are you able to tell us who, you say those in the group have given it support, are you able to tell us who that is?
I don't recall exactly all the group, the countries, all the Latin American countries, Spain, China, European Union, Belgium, Norway, two or three more countries. I can prepare the list if you want.
That would be helpful.
Okay.
And they're all in the subgroup, or that's GAC members?
No, that's a subgroup. The Peter is leading, it's kind of a weird situation, it's leading a bigger group about new GTLDs issues, and this is a part of this group, which is, I would say, the more active one, and I'm leading that effort among all the things that Peter is doing. So there are some countries that are working with me, but I can give you the exact list. Thank you.
That would be helpful. So I'll take 2 minutes or so to give a high-level update on where we are. So this group convened, and Bart, help me. We convened Singapore. Really, was our first. I mean, London was our first face-to-face, proper face-to-face. But we started to gear things up in Singapore. And as I said in the introduction to this, we've really taken the time to revisit the study group's report. A number of us in the group were members of the study group. It's wonderful to have Paul Schindler here, as Paul was the chair of the study group. And as I say, the study group's essential outcome was in trying to understand the use of country and territory names and identify where how those uses might then impact on new GTLDs. The study group had absolutely no mandate in terms of making recommendations beyond the recommendation that work could continue, really. And, of course, our mandate in the working group is now different and broader in scope. But as to scope, I should specifically say, and contrast this with what we heard yesterday in your meeting, Olga, that our mandate is country and territory names, and the study group worked quite hard to come up with a topology of what that could encompass. I encourage everyone who's not familiar with this topology to have a read of the study group report, which really that is the principal outcome of that study group. What we'll do today after this discussion is, as you can see on the agenda, talk about a work plan. In other words, how we might go forward. And so that is where we are. We have an understanding from you, Olga, thank you, on where you folks are in your process and the status of that work. And, of course, the scope of your work is much bigger. So the the characterization of names, you're looking at geographic and indeed other names. So it's helpful for us to understand that intersection. Bart.
Maybe in addition to, or to clarify a bit the terminology, the starting point of this working group is the country and territories which are listed in ISO 3166. That's a very important caveat, because this is where the overlap is between, say, the CCNSO and CCNSO policies, or the CCTLD policies and the new GTLD policies in general. So so it's a very precise, and that's the starting point, there are a very precise set of country and territories we're talking about, and then the deviations or derivations from it. And I think one of the, I wouldn't say the concerns, but it's, we say, one of the risks we're running, say in the broader community, is that we got two initiatives running around with geographic names, and, say, they might divert. So you might end up with situations where, say, one group, which has a very broad scope, in particular GACs, and then you have this cross-community working group, where we have members from the GAC participating as well, coming up and dealing with a very small subset of what the GAC working group is doing, and that they end up with diverging recommendations. And I think that would make life very, very complicated at the end of the day. So that's one of the reasons of inviting you and drill down a little bit how we could avoid this type of divergence, or assess the risk of this. And the starting point there is to see whether there is really overlap in the two groups. Yeah.
Thank you, Bart. I think your comment is really relevant. I think that we are totally complementary, because the problem that we found after the reveal day is that there are some regions or places or rivers or whatever that are not in the list that you are revising.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about a specific,
yep,
universe of names and lists, which is defined, which we agree. I mean, GAC agrees in the ISO 3166, 1, 2, whatever. So we are okay with those lists. And those lists are already, or were already included in the applicant guidebook as lists that those names needed or agreement or were prohibited or whatever. The problem that we found is that there are many regions that are not in those lists, and for some countries are regions and that are not in the list. So what we faced is that for example, for a brand owner, a name that is not in those lists, it's available. For a country, a name that it's a region, whether it is in the list or not, should not be available unless the applicant come and make some agreement. So I think it's a complement to your work. But if we stay in synthony, we can do a good outcome and not overlap. But we have to work. We have to be aware of what we do. But I think it's really complementary.
And thank you, Olga. I understand your point. But when you look at your draft, you have also included country and territory names. As it is today in the applicant guidebook, geographical names start in a way with cities. Because country and territory names, as it is today, they are not accepted as for applicants in this round. It's an exception for country and territory names. And the reason behind that was that it was so uncertain what to do with them. And one of the reasons was that we found that because of the IDN, if it had been accepted, some country names could have been a CCTLD if it had one IDN, a non-ASCII character, and others could be a GTLD. And that had complicated the situation even more. That it had followed two tracks or two different camps in a way. So we in this round, country and territory names are taken out, and that was why this study group and now this working group should see what to do with them. And I completely agree that from
from below city and capitals and all these other things in geographical names need some clarification more than it is today. So today it doesn't help with support or non-objection from a country to take a country name in, as it is today. So in your suggestion, since you so far include country and territory names and already define this as possible to have as a GTLD if you have the support or non-objection, that in my view goes a step further than what we are discussing here, because we don't have a conclusion for what to do with country and territory names. But the rest of it is completely yours.
May I comment, Annabeth? I'm not sure if I follow you completely. We don't want country names in GTLD, so that we agree in that. It's not the country name the issue. It's some regions which are not in official lists of ISO or other United Nations lists. So that's our concern. So I'm not sure if I follow you when. I'm not sure. Where do you see the overlap in other problems?
You have made a suggestion for the applicant guidebook in the paragraph 2214 should read as follows. And then you use the text we made in the GAC principles for new GTLDs in 2007. And then taking into consideration that according with the 2007 GAC principles regarding new GTLDs, ICANN should avoid country, territory, or place names. But there you include country and territory names unless in agreement with the relevant government and public authorities. Yeah, so in my view, it's kind of taken things a little too quick. Perhaps we find another solution for country and territory names. Even better. But we don't know that yet. So that's why we have to be careful to not end up with two different... Yeah, so you got it? Yeah.
I see your point, and I see the value of this session. So, yes, this text is taken from, you were there, in 2007, I think, when we agreed in Lisbon about these principles. And so this agreed text by GAC years ago. This is why we took that that input. But, yes, we can refine it. If you read the communique, is to work with ICANN and the community to refine the rules for the next round. So this is the purpose of this dialogue. And I personally am convinced that we need more inter-silo dialogue to avoid this misunderstanding of the first round.
Thank you, Olga.
All right. If I can cap that discussion by saying I think we can all agree within the study group that what we need is more certainty. We need applicants to have an applicant guidebook that they can rely on and not a process of a definition that then is not applied. So I think we all agree in that sense. I agree with Annabeth's comments that to the extent that our work can be extracted from your work, I think that's helpful. I think it would be helpful if the GAC acknowledged that there is another group working in this area. Yes, and participation between the two. I think it would be helpful if going forward, our information is quite public on the website and that sort of thing, if we had the same communication back from the GAC subgroup, I think that would be helpful, that we can keep track of this on an ongoing basis where each other is and ask questions when that arises. With that, I'll open the floor. I'm conscious of the fact that we have about 50 minutes left or 40 minutes left. Does anyone have any questions for Olga? If not, we'll continue. Or the other way around, indeed. Yeah.
Just one comment. If you would be so kind to send me an email and Peter to request an extending to make it a little bit more formal than me saying yes, extending the comment period so we can exchange the link and the documents. So that will be helpful. So then we share it with the chair and with the secretary. Thank you.
Uh,
Mary Duma for the purpose of recording. I want to ask whether it's possible for us to collapse the two efforts, because at the end of the day, from what you have said and from what Bad has said, it might come out to be that we're looking at the same thing but coming out with different solutions. So if it's possible, since these cross-constituency working group has been formed, if it's possible, if it is possible with GAG, so that we will all be having one effort, and at the end of the day, since there will be more people from GAG, more participants from GAG to join, so that we come up with one recommendation at the end of the day. I'm just asking for clarification, but I know that in GAG you don't represent all the members of the GAG. Every country is an island on its own, so that's what I want to ask Olga, whether it's possible. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. It's very good. I personally want that. I think the effort is only worth if we can really agree among all of us. So this is why I insisted in open the document for comments from the whole community. And I insisted to have the London meet. By the way, it was in Singapore. We couldn't make it because of the .one and .wine discussion that overlapped the meeting. And so we had no time. So we did it in London and we did it again. And the idea is to repeat it. So this effort of opening the documents and the process of working, for me, it's very constructive. So we can think about ways to formalizing this. Maybe you can send me an email with some ideas. I'm open to propose this to the GAC, of course. It's not only my decision.
If I might add to this, I think what we could do, and I agree, I think it's a wonderful initiative. Annabeth, you, I, Olga, we work together to invite the entire GAC. I think this needs to be a community discussion. We are, after all, a cross-community working group, and I think this is an excellent opportunity to do that. I agree. We, to the extent that we want full, open, and frank discussion, then we want every viewpoint in the room, and that at least, I speak personally here, I in terms of our dot point for later, I'm not sure about feasibility. I'm not sure how we're going to go with that. However, what it does do is at the end of the process, it means that there are no surprises. Everyone understands what everyone has said. They've said it in the same room. There's transparency. There's accountability. We've had that dialogue. There's no opportunity for someone later to say, you never raised that point. This is an ambush. This is an outrage. This is against process. I think to the extent that this group then... that in and of itself to me is an outcome, that we have a public opportunity to air our views, our disparate views, because I know there are disparate views here, and that in and of itself is an outcome. So if we could then work together, co-chairs Annabeth, you and I, Bart, and we'll connect Peter, as chair of the working group, and extend this invitation more broadly. And I suppose what I would do is exhort all of you. I am disappointed. I'll say that on the transcript, given the amount of people who were in the room on yesterday morning, I would have liked to see this room full. I would have liked to see this room standing room only, because this is not acceptable. This is an issue of importance that's underscored by the comments that were raised yesterday, and this empty room, not empty, but this room and the number of people in it suggests to me that there are going to be people that stand up at the end and say, I didn't know that this was going on, and I didn't know that this is the conclusion, and I wanted to participate. So each one of us needs to go back to our respective groups and encourage participation. With that, are there any further questions on this agenda item? If not, I suggest we turn to the discussion of the work plan. Having energized ourselves as to the big task ahead, let's talk about the big task ahead. Yeah. All right. Thank you. So could we have the work plan, please? And could we for the blind who ruined their eyes in law school. Can we? Yes. Can we make the agenda, or the work plan, a little bit larger, please? I see.
So everybody should have received it, yeah.
There we are. Perfect. One.
Great.
One.
Don't trust me with computers. I'm even worse than my wife. No, that's fine. Let me speak to it. You just received it, and as Heather already alluded to, we are, say, between now and the Marrakesh meeting, is probably the time when we need to have a sense of whether the a harmonized framework is feasible, yes or no. And leading up to that is, the working group has discussed the issue or the typology and the policies as a starting point, and this will lead up to, say, the issues identified, and this is a very complicated area, especially if you start using the typology, so derived from the ISO 3166 names, and you start applying them to the different policies. You end up with sometimes very strange outcomes. And this is what we, what Paul will do in his presentation later on, run you through a high-level part of these issues and drill down in one very, illuminating example. So going forward, it's, again, in the study group report, the major part of it is around the issues identified per combination policy and typology, or category in the typology, that's to put it. So I think that in order to understand and say the scope of harmonized framework and to see whether you can harmonize the issues in a framework, how to deal with or develop a framework that will harmonize all the different issues and that is acceptable for all parties concerned, including the GAC and the CCNSO or the CCTLD community and the GTLD community, that's going to be hard work. And what is necessary is a very thorough understanding of the issues. And so you have a common grasp of what's necessary. So going back, that was the background of this work plan up to Marrakesh. So today we'll start introducing the issues identified by the study group by Paul. Then in November, in the first call, is a first reading of the issues, meaning running through the study, the issues identified by the study group, and check whether the members of this working group and if the GAC members are interested, that they're kindly invited to attend these calls as well, is check whether the issues as represented in the study group report in fact are complete. Do they capture all the issues we think of and could think of applying both rules? Hence, and probably I'm not sure how we're going to run it if we go through every individual one and have an in-depth discussion on each of these sections under the issues, because that's the way it's structured, or we do a general reading again of and ask questions. Hence the need for a second reading for those who could not attend the first round, and if there are issues and it needs to be updated, you have a new document that needs to be checked by the working group. And then in January, say, you will have another call, and say, if it goes smoothly, then we can start discussing, initial discussion on a feasibility of a harmonized framework. So that would be the second call as well. So that's the way you should read it. We start with the issues, and if there is a second topic that can be introduced on a call, that's topic two for that specific meeting, and then on the, I think that's the fifth, no, the fourth column, is where you can find the overall goal if you would go back to the charter and the overall work plan that has been discussed in London. And leading up to Marrakesh is, I think, at the face-to-face meeting, say we need to, if there are real issues, that's the time to really discuss whether this working group thinks a harmonized framework is feasible, because that would be the first deliverable, real deliverable, concrete deliverable, and that could be, as Heather already indicated, it also could mean, say, we agree to disagree on this one, and that would then ultimately end up in a final report. So, we've tried, under the current circumstances, it's not feasible. So that's why it's structured the way it is. Any questions regarding the work plan? Marika.
This is Marika. Not a question, but maybe more of a suggestion, because I know that we have, you know, second readings, and I think it's really important indeed that everyone has an opportunity to review and provide input. But I'm wondering if it will be more effective to actually put that second reading out on the mailing list and basically say, look, this is what was discussed on the call. This is where everyone that was on the call stands. You have until this date to let us know if you have any issues. And if you have issues, we're going to discuss this during the next meeting. But if not, we assume that you've read it, you agree, and we move on. And it may save us some time on the calls going through things where everyone may actually already agree with what was agreed in the previous meeting. So maybe having a kind of step in between by putting it on the mailing list and basically saying, look, tell us by this date if you want to go through this again on the next meeting, and if we don't hear from anyone, we assume that this is understood, agreed to, and we continue the conversations.
I think it's an excellent idea, and the only refinement I would say is that at a second reading, so at a conference call, the chairs make it a point of order and say, we have done this, for the record, there's been no comments whatsoever, so we assume everybody agreed. And that's you could call the second reading, is concluding the second reading, and if there are issues, that's the way it's structured. That's why I have, say, if you have second reading, I've already included, say, a second topic in case, to avoid that we just sit there and say, oh, we all agree, oh, fine, and then and move forward. So that's a refinement, I would say, of the... Say the rules we started to develop at the meeting in London. So I'll include those in say the rules of engagement of this working group.
Daniel Kalchev, .bg. Maybe it is better to have some positive acknowledgement in these cases, not just assume that if nobody said anything, they agree with it. Because there may be many reasons they didn't say anything. And another thing, usually December and January are very difficult months for meetings. Probably, I mean, just an idea, why not have two calls in November, just in case we don't have enough participation in the later course?
It's the reason why I put in November and December, we haven't discussed dates. And my experience, at least with working groups, is that if you do something before mid-December, you will have a reasonable attendance. And January, if you do something post-mid-January, then it's workable as well. So that was, say, when designing this or developing this, that was a bit in the back of my mind. Another thing, and I assume a lot of you will be involved, we have two other items on our agenda which will consume a lot of effort and a lot of interest. And so we can be very, you can do this, cut and slice this, but I think most people, and be realistic about it, most people will be focused on these two other items, and we have to avoid to rush this through in that sense. And on the other hand, we need to make progress.
Okay, so then probably a better idea to have maybe two in January or something like that, just to let people catch up after this long pause we will have anyway.
Yeah, it's finding a balance there. I fully agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah, Marie-Dora.
First, the timetable is okay by me, and because of other issues that we are all handling one way or the other, one working group, one meeting, one other thing, and people are really busy. And as Bart has said, those days can be excluded from calls. But do we have a target date of turning in the recommendation or finalizing the report for public comment? One. Secondly, in the interim, are there some Joe applicant or Joe, GTLD registries that are asking for territory names, like using Nigeria.xyz, right? So are there such applications that are coming in? Are there such programs that are coming, so that while this group is still working, what happens in the interim?
Mary, again, and this is also for the GAC colleagues, is this is not about second level. This is about .Nigeria and not Nigeria.xyz. So that's a very, very important distinction. So we have to, everybody needs to be very clear on that one. Secondly, I think, but I'm not speaking on behalf of the chairs, it's just my personal vision, it would be very nice if this work would be concluded, no matter how, along the time when the real evaluation of the new GTLD process starts. However, there is also a second recommendation of the study group, which has not been made effective yet. The second recommendation of the study group at the time, and adopted by the CCNSO Council, is a joint letter from the GAC and the CCNSO to the ICANN board that, pending the work of this working group, the current exclusion of country and territory names under the new GTLD process will be extended. So in that sense, it's not been enacted or implemented, because we are making this progress, and already using that method is putting a lot of pressure on all sides. So there is no need at this stage, because we are making progress.
I just have this is Lars Hoffman for the record. We have a question in the chat asking whether it's actually a clear policy that territory names are preferred to brand names.
This is Heather. That was entirely out of scope of the study group. That was not the role of the study group to make any sort of conclusions, value judgments, if you like, prioritizations. And indeed, it's not specifically the scope of this group either. This group has been formed to identify issues and determine whether or not a framework can be developed. So that is not what we are here to do. And indeed, any specific policy on this issue would be drafted by the GNSO.
Again, as this is structured, and this is probably very important, is alluding a bit on what Heather has said, this is not replacing a policy development process at all.
The outcome of this working group will be a recommendation to the chartering organizations on maybe, say, first of all, on the feasibility of a harmonized and, if feasible, try to develop it, and then it's up to the chartering organizations whether or not and how they want to implement it.
Indeed, and to follow up on Bart, again, all of this will inform, I assume, given the path of how we do things, will inform a GNSO PDP.
Yeah. My apologies. I have to leave to another meeting, so I have to leave the room now. But thank you for the invite, and thank you for the efforts of the joint work, which I appreciate a lot. If you could send me the email in relation with extending the period of comments, that would be very helpful. Please, you can copy Peter if you want, and if we stay in touch to see how we can move forward. Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you, Olga, for being with us.
That's where we're starting from.
Yeah. So we want to do it.
Do you want to push it to a next
call?
Next call. Do it next call. Yeah.
What we're discussing at this end of the table, although I think it's fruitful, sometimes you don't meet your agenda timeline, but it happens for the right reasons, let's say. It's taken us some time to arrange this dialogue with the subgroup of the working group within the GAC, and I think that it was beneficial that we have that discussion, and particularly to have that face-to-face. So I suppose I see nodding heads. I suppose I speak for this end of the table in saying that although we're off our agenda timeline, that was not necessarily a bad thing to occur. With that in mind, we have a few more items on our agenda, and they're not small items in a sense that they speak to the work that lies ahead, the overview of the issues that were identified by the study group, and revisiting the work plan. Given that we've seen the work plan and we've had a bit of a discussion about that, what I would propose, and I'm happy to do otherwise, is if we do the overview of the issues now, that gives us food for thought then, and that can inform our next meeting. I think it would be helpful to at least frame the issues now so that we understand where those are, and then indeed we have our first discussion after we've had time to digest those. Given the cross-community nature of this as well, a number of us will want to go back and discuss these issues with our folks within our constituency. So I think that maybe is the right approach. If no one disagrees, I shall turn the mic over to Paul.
I'll just allow staff to mess around with the presentation of it a little bit. Apologies to those of you that have been part of the study group and historically have participated in it. You will recognise an awful lot of this material. And I was originally inclined to cut this back and make it 5 minutes, not 15 minutes, and I'll still be as concise as I can be. But given the discussion we've just had and some of the obviously lingering confusion about what this group does, I actually think another historical overview is probably worthwhile, because not only was this working group born out of the previous study group, but we are actually looking at a number of the issues that the group raised, so they're live in that sense. I'll go all the way back to the start, and I apologise, this slide deck was corrupted last night, so I'm going to go through it quite quickly, but it's not the right version, but we'll see what we can do. You can see that the history of the group is quite an ancient one. It was originally established in December 2010, and we started presenting and percolating on these issues in 2011. And the genesis of all of this work is important to understand, and that is there was an acknowledgement by the CCNSO Council that
the use of country and territory names is an important issue, and it may or may not be treated consistently across the broader ICANN environment. So the study group was established basically to give the council some advice, an overview of, is there an issue here, is there not? And if there is, what way can we, you know, how can we go forward from here? Sorry, Lars, can I steer this or...? Next slide, please. This is going to happen a lot. It's a big slide deck. So again, the study group had three key functions. One is look at the policies that are out there at the time, and they changed as we were working because we had the fast track for IDN CCTLDs, and we had the full IDN policy, CCTLD policy, in train, so things were changing. So look at all the policies, the applicant guidebook for new Gs, existing CCTLD policy, anything that was out there, and then look at the ways in which country and territory names might be represented. What might someone reasonably call a representation of a country and territory name? And function three was to look at what happens when you smash the two together. What happens? You've got these various permutations. What happens when you try to jam that into ICANN policy? Is the output consistent? Is it predictable? And that was the key function of the study group, and to build recommendations on that. Next slide, please, Lars. So this is my favourite slide, and I've used it loads of times because this was not in the scope of the study group and will not be in the scope of this working group. We're not about defining what is and isn't a CCTLD, the turf line, so to speak, between Cs and Gs. That's been raised a number of times, but is definitely not in the scope of the study group. And again, we mentioned earlier, we're not about country and territory names at the second level. It is purely country and territory names as TLDs. And the reason for that decision was, and it was obviously a prudent one, was that narrow body of work, just country and territory names, and as the next point says, we're not about any other geographical names, just country and territory names, just at the top level, ended up being 3 years' worth of work. So if you want to add in all the permutations and combinations that may end up coming out of added complexity, then, you know, it just goes to show how long this process could go. Again, it wasn't about intervening in the first round of new GTLDs because there was already an exclusion on country names, and it wasn't about judging or making recommendations for protections. Those issues are key because these are the things that were raised as concerns while the study group was doing its work. Thanks, Lars. And look, I don't need to go through that. So there were three steps. Step one, what are the policies? Roughly speaking, they're up there on the slideshow for whoever can't see it. New GTLD applicant guidebook, IDN CCTLD. Yeah, it's already been covered. Next. So what we did was, when you then look at how country and territory names might be represented, do we just make it up? Do we just come up with any ideas we may have? No, we need something that helps guide us so that we have some sort of framework to look at what we're doing. Hence the wonderful topology that Bart played a significant role in developing. So there was 10 different categories that we used. In the instance of Australia, alphacode2.au, alphacode3.aus, and other abbreviations, long-form names of the country. And even though that was a very narrow list, we ended up with an awful lot of data and a lot of representations of country names. It was also the basis for a survey that UNESCO helped us with, where they went out to a subset of member states and used that topology to get the member states to say how they would represent themselves, the names that they would use to represent themselves. And that was handy because it gave us quite a bit of data back, but also showed us, again, where there's misunderstanding potentially from countries, from governments, it is UNESCO after all, of the data we were looking for. So what I did is left in a few examples I deviated from Bart and I, what Bart and I discussed a little bit. The representation of the way we have Russian Federation now, RF, in the IDN CCTLD fast track. So these are the case studies that we're talking about. These are the issues and the problems that we came up with. That was what they chose as their representation in the fast track. But what was to happen if Russia was to choose to do something with their full name in Cyrillic, so the representation of Russian Federation? Thanks, Lars. Look, are there non-Latin characters? Yep, there are. Is it meaningful? Yeah, absolutely it is. But could it be an IDN CCTLD? Well, no, it can't, because it's only, as it says there, one string per language or script per country and territory. So it falls into this gap of, well, what could you do with it? What else could they do with it? Thanks, Lars. This is a favourite one, because what I actually did was went back to an old slide deck Bart and I did... I don't even remember which meeting. Anyway, a while ago. And we looked at what was actually outside of the scope of the study group, things that we, not outside of scope, but things we chose not to look at because it was too complicated. Future names. How do you possibly look into your crystal ball and look at what may happen with future names? So Netherlands Antilles dissolved in October 2010, and suddenly that's no longer represented as a country or territory name, and as Bart pointed out to me, educated me in, that's two new countries and three new islands as municipalities. So that's fine. Curaçao was represented because it was added as CW into the ISO 3166.
Yes.
That's right, two-letter code list, and CUW in the three-letter code list, and .AN was retired. And this has happened before with the Soviet Union and Yugoslavia, the codes that represent them. So that's fine. But, however, if new GTLDs had launched before December 2010, and a lot of people would have hoped it would have, but CUW would have been a valid application. I'm not saying that anyone would necessarily want it, but we've seen hundreds of strings that I thought nobody would apply for anyway, and they have, so it's not insane to think that might have been something that someone had applied for. But it couldn't have been factored into policy at that stage. .ant, the three-letter code. I don't know why somebody would want .ant necessarily, but it's now provisionally reserved for 50 years, because that's what happens when the ISO retires a term. Curaçao, with the correct non-Latin script and the non-Latin character, would technically qualify as an IDN CCTLD, or, I don't know, we've got .bar. Why would you not have it as a generic term for liquor? So there's many representations and things we couldn't have thought about before it actually happened. And I'd only included South Sudan because that had just happened at the time, because their three-letter code is SD, and in tech terms, that's as a solid state drive, that's recognised as a valid string. Historical names, I won't go through that in detail, but it's exactly the same as future names. The historical names of countries and territories aren't covered at the moment in the applicant guidebook, and unless there's significant changes, I don't expect there would be. So the onus becomes upon government to object to a particular string that might be proposed. Thanks, Lars. And there, by showing examples, you can see why there may be issues. The Netherlands has historically been referred to as the Republic of the Seven Provinces. Okay, nobody's going to want a string relating to that, but it just goes to show that it doesn't fit anywhere within the categories we talked about. Cathay for China, well, there is an airline that might be significantly interested in that. Thailand's historical name of Siam. I only put Tonkin in because, well, in honour of Bruce. But it was a French protectorate in North Vietnam, and of course Sri Lanka's had this history of significant representations of its name and changes to it, and Ceylon is certainly something in terms of the sale of tea and other things that may be of interest as a particular string. These may seem a little extreme, but hey, we had 1,800-1,900 applications in the first round. May have many more in subsequent rounds. These are the things that need to be considered and weren't looked at as a study group in particular. So again, the observations to wrap it up, the study group said, look, it's really hard to categorize names, and if we start adding in multiple languages and scripts, it becomes near impossible. As such, lists are fallible. You can't, there is no, and I wish Olga was still in the room for my presentation, but a reliance on lists is ultimately due to fail. We did have another presentation and another slide deck that we went through where we looked at the ISO list versus various UN standards, and Yap helped out with other with the ISO list and the interpretation of that, and they were inconsistent. There were certain territories that were on one list and not on another. The other observation of the group was, no, there is not universal, predictable, consistent treatment of country and territory names. If you plug something into the GTLD process, you will get one thing. If you apply for it as a C, you'll get another thing, and various other things. So the most important point is, it's not about protectionism here. It's about the fact that stakeholders, end users, applicants for new GTLDs, whoever it may be, may face a degree of uncertainty as to what they're spending their money on or the process they're embarking down. Thanks, Lars. And secondly, we did note that the applicant guidebook probably set the benchmark in terms of protection of country and territory names. It was an absolute prohibition in the first round, but we noted at the time that it was just for the first round. And we noted also a few restrictions as part of the IDN, CCTLD and fast track policy that I'd mentioned earlier. And thank you, Lars. And finally, that led to the group's recommendations, which was set up this working group, provide advice about whether it is feasible, is it possible for us to come up with a consistent definitional framework that overcomes some of the issues that I'd identified in those previous slides, and if it's feasible, provide some advice to relevant bodies as to what that framework is going to look like. I've not included it because it was already too many slides, but as Bart mentioned earlier, within the recommendations, there was also that recommendation to the CCNSO Council and GAC that we communicate to the ICANN board that until the work of this group is concluded, the prohibition on the use of country and territory names as it currently exists in new GTLDs be extended for the second and subsequent round. That may end up being an irrelevant piece of advice if it ends up taking as long to get to the second round as it currently looks, but it's just about putting that place marker out there. It would be a folly to proceed with a second round while we're still doing work on those issues. So I'm sorry for the historical lesson, but I think for some it's probably useful because that's how this group ended up where it is. Thank you, Heather.
Thank you very much, Paul, and I will say it's very, very helpful to have that continuity between the study group and the working group. So I'm delighted that you're still here and with us and hopefully willing to stay here and with us. It's very helpful. With that, I would suggest that we close our meeting. It's exactly 9:15. Bart, is there anything that you need to add from your point of view?
No. I've got a microphone. No, the only thing is I hope people who were not on the study group now understand why we need to take some time to run through the issues, because they're detailed, and you will come up and you will see some very, very weird outcomes. And that's, it will set the scope, say, over-harmonized, or it will define the scope of a harmonized framework, and it will also lead into the major question, is it possible, yes or no? But that needs a very thorough understanding of the issues. And only based on that, say, I think you can have a factual recommendation as whether to move forward. So the next meeting, we will send out a doodle poll, or we suggest a date, and then we do it on a rotating basis again, as usual, and it will be running through a first part of the issues and again allude to it and have a discussion around it.
Thank you very much, Bart. May I close by offering my thanks and on behalf of the group, our collective thanks to Lisa Fuhr for her brief but helpful role as in the co-chair's position, and we wish you very well in your weighty new responsibilities. Good luck to you, and welcome Annabeth in that role. With that, we can close the meeting, and I thank you very much. I return to my earlier exhortation. This is an issue that many are interested in, and they need to be in the room. Thank you very much.